Well, it was something. It sort of affected me for a considerable amount of time after the event. I had a period where today you would call it PTSD, and I went through a period for about a couple of years. You know, I sort of very unsettled. And after the accident, I left the railways. I stayed with the railways for another year, and then I left. I just couldn't handle it anymore. Then I had nightmares for a period of time. But over, you know, I would say after about 6 years and so on, anything that was related to it, I had newspaper cuttings and all that. I got rid of all them. I just couldn't bear looking at them anymore. But then, you know, I re-enlisted in the Army in 1971. And after a while, I sort of let it go. But at the time, it was hard.
Take us back to that day. What do you remember of that day?
Well, we were on a goods train. We took a goods train out of Dinan to go to Wodonga and Albury. And at Benalla, we were informed that we would have a running cross at the crossing loop with the Southern Aurora Express. And that was it. And so when we approached Violet Town, where the running cross was supposed to take place, we were coming away in the bend, and my job as a fireman is to observe things that are going on. So when you go around the bend, you look back and see that everything is all right. You haven't got any extra burnings or anything like that. And my driver then called out Laurie Rose. He called out. He said, "Shit, the bus is still coming." And when I looked around, I could see the headlight off the train, and I could see the signal box at Violet Town. And by then, I knew we were in deep shit, so to speak, you know. And so Laurie, he put on the brakes straight away. And he went back into the engine room of the locomotive. We'd always been taught that in the case of an imminent head-on collision, go back in the engine room for safety. And he did that. I sort of panicked a little bit at first. I was going to jump off. I opened the door, and then I had a look. Shit, we're still doing about 50 kilometers an hour, and you're high off the ground. And I thought, nah. I went back to go into the engine room to follow Laurie. But when I looked, the Southern Aurora, the engine was only about 20 meters. And, I mean, that left me no time. So I took a forward jump. I was a martial arts sort of person. I was into judo. And one of the things we always did was do forward rolls whenever we do something. And instinctively, I just sort of jumped out. And lucky I did, because if I jumped feet first, I would have fallen back, and that would have been the end of the story. I did a forward jump. I landed on a heap of ballast. You know what the ballast is? It's a metal they put between the sleepers on the railway track.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And the only one within about 2 miles, and the only heap of ballast I'd buy. In a way, I think it might have been good that I hopped into that, because I didn't roll back or anything like that. So, but then I saw, you know, that's with the impact. I saw the two trains sort of hitting up. And the engine climbed over. And then I was sort of stunned there for a bit. And then I managed to get away, and then the flames started coming out. Yeah. So, that was a bloody horrifying experience, I tell you.
You know, we hear about trains colliding head-on, yeah. But you had a front-row view to that.
Exactly, mate. And that was something, that's something you never forget. And when I picked myself up, I didn't feel anything for a while, because, you know, I broke my collarbone and all that. But then when I realised what was happening, I then started, you know, trying to get windows smashed and all that to get people out and so. But how effective that was on my part, I don't know.
You were pretty badly injured, though. You had bruises all over you.
All over that. The whole right-hand side, from my ears right down to my toes, was all just black and blue, because that's how I landed in that. And that's it. The train was still doing about 50 kilometres an hour. The combined speed at the time of impact was, they reckon, was 128 kilometres an hour. So that was one almighty bang, you know.
That noise must have been deafening.
Terrible, yeah. And then the screeching, and what continued on for quite a while, to my mind, was the ongoing screeching of metal and all that. And I was actually seeing one carriage climbing on top of another. And then you could see from the flames and all that, they were stainless steel carriages, and you could see the metal turning blue. I mean, the intense heat of that. And why, you know, I mean, only 9 people got killed in that, and that was a miracle in itself, I tell you.
A lot of people injured. What happened to the driver in your train?
My driver, he died. He went into the engine room, and he was, you know, by the time they recovered him, he was like a clinker, like a brick. That's the intense heat of that, and so that was just it, you know.
So if you'd stayed there and gone with him...
I would have been the same, yeah. I greatly believe that the good Lord was looking after me when this happened, right? Because I bailed out at the right time. And see, what happened, we didn't... For me, one of the most harrowing parts was later on the coroner's inquest, because you relived all that and questions were asked. And at the time, I was really sort of... I was very angry because, first of all, I was hospitalised. I was in hospital for about 3 days or something like in Rangaratta. And one of the kids, her name is Heather Newell. She was a young girl. She was pulled out by a jockey, actually, because he was so small he could crawl in. And her and I, we went in the ambulance together to the Rangaratta Hospital. And I actually saw her there, and she lost her mum and her sister in that. But I got really angry because straight after, within days, you had this system in the railways. The elite crews are those of express trains, you know, the drivers and the firemen, they're just the elite. The baggy asses, so to speak, or the roustabouts, they were the ones that used to drive the goods trains, right? So the moment this happened, they straight away started pointing the finger at the goods train. I mean, they would never think that it could happen to the express train. It would have had to be the goods train. So straight away, we were sort of virtually demonised, you know. I had the homicide detectives for 2 days running, sort of knocking on my flaming door and trying to, because the railway were trying to find an answer, but I also wanted to shift the blame on somebody, right? So I got really hot under the collar a few times, man, I'll tell you, man, because they were trying to say that we were drunk. They said, you know, your driver, he must have had a good time or something like that. And my driver was a teetotaler, yeah. And what made it worse was the fireman on the Southern Railway, he wasn't where he was supposed to be. I don't really know where he was, and I don't think he ever really came out where he was.
So your equivalent on the Southern Aurora,
yeah,
we don't quite know where he was.
Well, I don't know where he was. They say some of them said he went into the dining car to get coffee, which is a dining car on the express train. I've got my own ideas about that, but we don't know.
Well, what's your own ideas?
Well, I think he was in the dining car to get, because you had access from the engine, you could walk straight into the carriages and go to the dining car. Maybe this has been, it's happened before that people did that.
Did he die?
No, the fireman survived, but he was badly injured.
Now, what about the driver? He had a heart attack and died.
He had a heart attack. Again, there was, you know, I mean, I knew the guy and I've been with him a couple of times and just a gentleman. He had a heart condition and he was treated by my family doctor. And the family doctor treated him for a heart condition. His family doctor was my family doctor. And obviously the doctor, you know, patient doctor confidentiality. And I don't think he really realised that it was his role to inform the railway authorities, because the railways, every year we had to have a medical. Now, surely the railway doctor should have picked it up or something, like, but anyhow, it didn't happen. You
know. Now, I spoke to Bruce Cumming yesterday. When I spoke to Bruce, he said it was important that the people who died and this particular train crash should be commemorated. There should be memorials. There should be some involvement by families. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I do. There should be recognition, especially to those people who were directly involved. And so, you know, and that's not only the people from the railways, but the fire brigade, the ambulance people, and all those people that were involved, because it was, from what I recall, it was just a horrendous scene. It was like a war zone, you know. And it would have affected a lot of people, especially people who went there to pull people out of carriages and all this sort of stuff. You know, it would have been, there should be, I personally feel that the railway department should set a lot of money aside for that town, or Violet Town, to do something for the township. You know, and whether they finance the memorial gardens or something like that, there should be a lot of recognition.
You were on the Victorian Railways.
Yeah.
What brought you to Mosman?
Well, before I joined the Victorian Railways, I was in the army for 6 years, and I stayed in until 1984. So, you know, and after I finished with the army, my last posting was in Townsville. And then I got out of there. Once I got out of the army, I went into business for a while. And we wanted to actually, my wife and I, she comes from Papua New Guinea. We wanted to go and start a resort in Medang, but all that didn't work out. So we finished up across the river in the Daintree, a place called Cow Bay. We were there for 11 years. Beautiful place.
Yeah.
And then out of there, we came into here. Right? Yeah. So that's, yeah. And I'm driving the school bus.
Yes, you're driving the school bus here in Mossman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it's quite amazing to meet the man who was in one of those trains who actually survived. It's quite a pleasure to meet you. Oh,
thanks a lot, mate.
It's interesting, in your little hallway there, I notice you've got a couple of religious-type ornaments.
Yeah, yeah,
you obviously
yeah.
have a great faith.
Well, we do, yeah. We're a Christian family, we're believers and so, and at that particular time, although I had a Lutheran background, I wasn't all that church-minded at that particular time. But I did recognise the fact that what happened to me and the outcome of that was not just my doing. Just because I was fairly good in sort of looking after myself, there was somebody higher up that looked after me. Right? And the same with the family and so, you know. And out of all that, I lived in a small community. We built our own house in a place called Kilara, just outside Wodonga. And it was a community made up of all, you can say, like a United Nations, refugees from after the war. There were Russians, Hungarians, Polish, Czechoslovakians. When this happened, and I was out of work for a while, people flocked, and I hardly ever sort of said hello to them. They just came from everywhere, and just they were there for us. It was a great, great thing. Out of something like that, something good comes out. Yeah? There's always a good outcome, and so.
Well, Fred, to see you sitting here now, you've led a full life. You could have well joined that poor man who was the driver you were next to, but you're here with us and you've led a full life. Boy, it doesn't get any better than that.
No, definitely not. I've got a lot to be thankful for, right? And a good family to surround me. Yeah, that's it.